supporting the city.
For this meeting.
Okay, it's on, it was.
Good morning. Now, I'd like to call to order this meeting of the Education Sub of Ways and Means. We are here this morning to hear from the Board of Pharmacy. And Kim, you want to say anything to start with?
Mr. Co-Chair.
All tablets.
Members of the committee, today we have a public hearing on Senate Bill 5530, which is the appropriation bill for the Board of Pharmacy. Today, it's just public hearing and public testimony. And the agency is here to provide you with an agency overview. The agency does have a new director, and his name is Marcus Watt. And he's here with two board members, Ken Wells, the board president, and Christine Shute, another board member. And from DAS, the Department of Administrative Services, we'll have Claire Clark from CFO to present the governor's budget. And I guess we can go ahead and get started.
Welcome. Come on up.
Hi.
Okay, Co-Chair Kong, Co-Chairman Roth, committee members, thank you for allowing us to spend some time with you this morning. My name is Marcus Watt. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Pharmacy. This is Karen McClain, the Administrative Director of the Board of Pharmacy. Before we get into our presentation.
And you've been on board how long?
I just had my first year anniversary last week.
Oh, okay. So this you're is my, an old veteran.
This is my first rodeo with you guys. So if I get off in the weeds somewhere, you need to pull me back, please speak up and we'll address any questions you might have. A little bit of background before we get into the presentation. I have been a pharmacist in the state for 37 years, primarily in retail and specialty pharmacy. 28 of those were spent in management positions. And through the years, in those positions, I developed sort of a career concept that I live by in everything that I do, and that is to produce a high-quality product delivered with the highest level of customer service as efficiently and economically as possible. And those are the guidelines that I brought to this position that I intend to continue with. So with that, the purpose of the Board of Pharmacy is to regulate the practice of pharmacy and the quality and distribution of drugs within the state. The board is uniquely qualified amongst the other healthcare boards in that not only do we regulate people, we regulate places. In the commerce of drugs, anything from the manufacturer through the end user flows through one of our licensees. The authority for this is given to us by ORS 689 and the ability to regulate controlled substances by ORS 475. The board was established in 1891. As a footnote, next year, 2016, will be our 125th anniversary. Our board is currently has 7 members. 5 are pharmacists, 2 are public members. We currently have 19 FTEs. And if we go to the next slide, we have our proposed organizational chart. I'm not sure if you have any questions.
Go ahead. We'll interrupt you if we
need
to.
Okay, great. As I mentioned earlier, we have both people and sort of place licenses. The individual licenses, as of February 1st, we have 6,611 pharmacy licenses that we regulate. This is an increase of just over 11% from the last time we made this budget presentation. Pharmacy technicians, this number up here represents a 4.9% increase. And interns remains pretty much constant at approximately 818 licensees. In the outlet categories, we have our primary drug outlets that we regulate are pharmacies with 1,460. This is an increase of 13.6% over the last budget cycle, and 64% of these are in-state. 36% of these are out of state. As I mentioned, anyone shipping prescriptions or medications into the state is required to be licensed and regulated by us. Manufacturers, this number represents an 11.5% increase. Wholesalers, 16.6% increase. And this last category is problematic to me in that this number represents a 21% reduction from 2 years ago. I was not aware of this trend until we started preparing this budget, and in doing some quick research, it became apparent to me what has happened. These outlets are like 7-Eleven or anyone who sells an over-the-counter product, ibuprofen, Tylenol. They're required to be licensed by us. And in the past, prioritization of needs within the agency and the fact that these outlets really present a very, very low risk to the public, we sort of let this slide, which is, like I said, problematic to me. Now that we're aware of this, we're going to come up with some sort of strategy to address this. What I believe is happening is they're just not renewing their licenses or not obtaining them. And while it is a very low risk to the public, it does present some risk, and we need to do a better job with these.
Mr. Chair.
Co-Chair Comp.
I know this probably, thank you, Mr. Chair, is not maybe pertinent right here, but as you're talking about non-prescription things, and we have, I know they're going to be working on it probably for a long time, but the marijuana distribution, do you see that finding some, one of these categories as part of that discussion?
I do not. That really has been taken out of the purview of the Board of Pharmacy. And there are some very good reasons for that. Most all of our licensees are registered with the DEA. And with marijuana still being a Schedule I controlled substance with the DEA, to put those marijuana in a licensee creates friction there. So I think the state made a very wise decision in going through the OLCC route. From what I'm seeing, I believe they'll come up with a fairly robust process to regulate that.
Right. Thank you.
Senator Roblin.
I would say, as you look at the non-prescription, you know, we've gone through a very difficult recession over the last number of years, and there are a lot of little AMP, a lot of little marketplaces that no longer exist. In some of our rural areas, they just couldn't make it during the time. And so we've got a lot of closed storefronts, and I would expect that part of that has to do with the decrease in the number of those non-prescription. And it would be good information for us to look at how our economy affects those things, not only from the point of view of not having those businesses, but also places where people can get things like aspirin and Tylenol and that kind of stuff.
And we honestly just took our eye off the ball on this, and so we don't know what the circumstances are.
Yep.
Okay. The next slide represents some of the other miscellaneous drug outlets that we have. Our board has 30 unique and different categories of licensees. The total, as of February 1st, was 25,239. This represents an 8.1% increase from the prior presentation. This slide shows the breakdown total licensees by type and number. Okay, in the governor's 10-year plan, the Board of Pharmacy falls into the safety outcomes area. Our goals here are maintaining the security and integrity of the drug supply, to ensure that Oregon pharmacists are adequately trained, appropriately licensed, and competent, and to make sure that Oregon citizens have convenient access to high-quality pharmacy services. The Board of Pharmacy is budgeted as one single program unit, and internally we're organized into three different operations. Those are licensing and examination, compliance, and operations and administration. Every year our board has a strategic planning meeting where they sit down and they develop what they want to address and what they want us to address. These are a list of the things that came out of our last strategic planning meeting. The first two bullet points there really are related to technology. Technology is evolving so rapidly, and the application of that is evolving so rapidly that we find ourselves sometimes our rules will prevent things that we think should happen or don't address them at all. Our board has been challenged to keep our awareness of these technologies at a high level and to attempt to react as quickly as possible where it's appropriate. Telemedicine is a great example of that. I know that 5 years ago you didn't hear too much about it, and then just I think 2 weeks ago there was four or five vendors in your hallway here talking about the advantages. And as it evolves so quickly that we don't always have rules to address it, and we need to be flexible to do that. Medication reconciliation was an objective. Our number one issue for us is always reduction of medication errors. This is always on this list. It's always very important. I wish I could say that this didn't happen, but it does. We spend a tremendous amount of time through educational efforts and outreach to our licensees to try to drive these numbers down. Non-pharmacy dispensing continues to be a concern. A renewed customer focus. When I came here, I've always had a passion for customer service, and it's very, very important to me. Our KPMs measure customer service, but when I was here, first got here, I wanted to have a little better idea of what the board was actually doing and how we were perceived. So during our pharmacist license renewal last year, we sent out an additional survey to all the pharmacists that renewed their license. We received 577 responses, and I was very happy to see that on the overall customer service score, 52% rated us as excellent. An additional 37% rated us as good, for an overall customer service rating of 89% good or excellent. And what was even more telling, though, were all the comments that were attached to the survey. It was very enlightening to look at. There were definitely some trends there that indicated things that we could do better that we weren't aware of at that time. So we have some issues there that we're going to address. Technician duties was another one, and then succession planning within the agency.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Huffman.
Thank you. On the previous slide, the reduction in medication errors, the last 6 months there was a fatal error at a Central Oregon hospital. Do you guys investigate that, or do you jointly investigate with another agency, or how does that work?
We just completed our first presentation to our board on that incident. At this point in time, because the error was initiated within the pharmacy area, I'm not aware of an investigation by any other agencies. Our board has asked for more information on that, and we're going back to get more details for them to decide what it is they want to do and how wide they want to go.
Okay. So it's largely up to your agency to investigate.
Yes. The hospital, I have to say, though, did handle this very honorably. They immediately called for an ISMP, which is the Institute for Safe Medical Practices, to come in and do a root cause analysis. These people were there within 3 or 4 days. They went through and they looked at all the elements that contributed to it. And while the error happened in the pharmacy, this was one of those errors where 40 different variables have to line up perfectly for this thing to happen. And so all those things were identified, and they're being addressed by the hospital, we're told. We haven't seen the exact plans in some of the areas outside the pharmacy, but they acted very quickly and very decisively.
Thank you.
Okay, we interact with state and national professional and industry groups, consumer groups. With Oregon state agencies, we interact a lot with the Oregon Health Association, primarily with the immunization programs. Pharmacists give an awful lot of immunizations in the state. But we have a very good relationship with the people in those overlapping responsibilities. Federal regulatory agencies, the two that are primary to us are the FDA and the DEA. We have good relationships with them. And not many people realize the impact of a decision by either of these agencies, what impact it can have on our licensees and the citizens of Oregon. I think many of you will remember that last year the DEA upscheduled hydrocodone products from a Schedule 3 controlled substance to a Schedule 2 controlled substance. The restrictions around a Schedule 2 versus a Schedule 3 are fairly significant, and the time to implement was very, very short. We were very much afraid that if we weren't very proactive in getting the information out and helping everybody understand, and to include the public, that there could be, you know, discontinuation of care. Working with the other health care boards and our licensees, we were able to get that information out very quickly, and there was very, very minimal impact to the public. But, you know, a blind edict from the DEA with 60 days to employ it can be a challenge.
Senator Roblin.
So when we see, samples that are given by doctors, all of that is regulated through you, or is that something separate? And on a second note, you see all these advertising on TV about getting a sample of XYZ drug or an association that if you can't afford your drugs, we're going to come in and help you get them. Or is that stuff that you deal with, or is that other agencies that have to deal with all of that?
Co-chairs and Senator Roblin, samples are carved out of our responsibilities. Those are regulated by the feds. Pharmacies are not allowed to have samples in their pharmacy. The law changed, I believe, in about 86. So those are regulated outside of us, and they're very strictly regulated. If a physician is accepting samples, they have to be segregated and accounted for separately from whatever other stock they would have. As far as the advertisements go, most of the drugstores that do that, where they're talking about a sample, they are engaging a retail pharmacy to mail, you know, to obtain a prescription and then to mail it to the patient so that that's it's true. Legitimate. And those people would be under our purview. Okay. The other agency at the federal level that we deal with a lot is the FDA. They have a very renewed focus right now on pharmacy compound and manufacturing, as well as guaranteeing the quality of the drug supply chain line, drug chain supply line. Major budget drivers, our activities include examinations, licensing, investigations, information, and education. Staffing is our primary expense. Our 66% of our budget is strictly to personal services, 29% are services and support, for a total of approximately 95% of our total budget. Some of the environmental factors that are impacting us, as I mentioned earlier, the expanding automation and technology, this just gets faster and faster. The increasing prevalence of practitioner dispensing. This is a concern for us from the perspective of the increased potential for diversion and also the introduction of adulterated and misbranded drugs into our supply lines. The increasing complexity and scope of investigations is also another issue for us.
Representative Springer has a question.
thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Back up a little, if you would, and explain, help me understand, the increasing prevalence of practitioner dispensing. I don't yet have a picture of what it is you're talking about.
Okay. Co-chairs, Representative Springer. There's been some discourse on this over the past 2 years. I came on board last February, and there was a bill at that. I need to back up. I'm sorry. Currently, we have the legal authority to regulate the commerce of all drugs in the state. There are companies out there that are presenting physicians and nurse practitioners and other people with business models that would allow them to set up a vending machine in their office and dispense drugs, and they're advertising it as you can make $60,000, $80,000 by dispensing your own prescriptions. We have currently have regulatory authority over that. At the short session last year, there were bills introduced that would remove our authority from those other healthcare practitioners. It was seen as the Board of Pharmacy was getting into their professional practice, which was never the intent of the board. We were directed by Senator Monis Anderson and Representative Greenlink to do a non-legislative work group to try to resolve these issues. We met throughout last year, and we have developed a compromise concept that we are sitting on. The agreement was that we would wait until sometime after July 1 before we would do anything to allow anyone that may not agree with that concept to introduce a bill and go forward. So we have our concept that all the shareholders have been involved in writing, and We're waiting. Now, that being said, the issues for us are diversion is one of those. The other healthcare providers, if you look at their disciplinary processes, they say it's about 20-25% are substance abuse issues. And in the pharmacy world, if someone's going to divert drugs, they just go over to a 500-tablet stock bottle and they take 10 or 20 out and put it in their pocket, and it's not really noticeable. If you're dispensing 5,000 tablets of something a day, it's not really apparent for a while. If you were to have a situation where the practitioner was standing alone, could order the product in, and there's no record keeping of where it goes or anything else, and that would be tied into a regulatory agency where they are complaint driven, you have a great potential for diversion of those substances. The other issue for us is the adulteration and misbranded. Our pharmacies all know that they need to buy their drugs from wholesalers or sources that are approved by us and licensed by us. We're finding that these people that are reaching out to the doctors, these companies, are not licensed, and there's no guarantees that they are maintaining the quality of those products. So our concept basically would be that we would regulate only the storage, purchasing, and record keeping of those practitioners if it were to happen.
Senator Roblin?
Thank you. Yeah, I have actually seen a couple of dispensing machines in very remote parts of the Oregon coast because the little clinics, and it's a long ways to the nearest pharmacy, and those doctors were saying, this has been a real help. Again, I said, well, you can't have the myriad of drugs. He says, no, we just have a very limited supply of the kinds of things that we use most often. But it certainly has made it easier for some of our patients, especially elderly and others in these areas, to get pharmacy products that they didn't have before. So I understand the concerns, yeah. But I would hope that we'd figure out ways in which some of that can happen. I don't think they were making a lot of money off of it. They were just trying to provide a service for people who otherwise would have had a difficult time getting any of those drugs.
Yes, and our concept will allow what we would call traditional dispensing to continue to occur. We're not after the physician that's giving someone a 10-day supply of an antibiotic or an inhaler, that kind of thing. We're talking about someone who's going to be setting up a mini pharmacy in his office. And even then, we're only looking to make sure that the storage and purchase and record keeping requirements are up to date. Okay. We have changing pharmacist roles as an environmental factor with the advent of coordinated care organizations and accountable care organizations. The role of the pharmacist is changing. We need to be able to write rules and statutes to address those. Challenges to drug supply security and integrity keeps coming up, and we try to address this. We have limited ability. In a world where you can go on the internet and click a mouse and purchase any drug you want and have it shipped to your house, that presents some real risk. The majority of the drugs that are being purchased over the internet without a prescription are coming from out of the country. The Customs has done studies that show that 80% of those drugs either don't contain any of the product they pertain to, or they have other amounts, and this is just a huge issue. On a federal basis, we, along with the other boards of pharmacies, are attempting to address this, but it's still, an issue for us. Some of the bills that we're monitoring this session are up on the board. The two that are probably would be the biggest challenge for us if they were to pass would be House Bill 2558. This would schedule any nicotine-containing product, i.e. tobacco, as a Schedule 3 controlled substance, and would require prescription and going to the pharmacy to get the medication. There's also House Bill 148, which would change our membership. Cost control and increase efficiency. When I came on board, I was looking for ways to balanced workload in our licensing department. I looked at everything, but there was very obvious to me that we had some opportunities in workload balancing. And looking at that, it became very apparent that by structuring our pharmacist and technician's license to a biennial licensure on the same date with alternating years renewal, that we could reduce the workload, become more efficient, and offer better product. As we began to implement that, it also presented a great opportunity for us to address something that I know has been a problem for all of you. Our ending balance has been substantially high in years past. I believe at the presentation 2 years ago it was 14 or 15 months. We've been working to get that down, but our plan right now is to implement this over the next 2 years for pharmacists and technicians. So when that license expands from a 1 year to a 2 year license, we are not going to be raising the fees. It will stay at a 1 year level. This will allow us to take over $800,000 off of our ending balance in the next biennium. As we progress through that and evaluate the responses to it, we're going to go back and look at our other fees to see if there are other adjustments we need to make to get those numbers down to where you'd like to see them. Electronic fingerprinting, our board was one of the first adopters of this process, and it's been wonderful. While it hasn't reduced cost or efficiency within our own licensing department, the impact on our licensees has been substantial in that they're getting their license issued much faster than they did before. We're not having to wait for fingerprint cards to go out and back three different times before we get the results. They're coming typically within 5 business days. We continue to have a flat rate agreement with the DOJ. This is great from a budgeting perspective. They're slightly problematic in that I understand DOJ is going to want to renegotiate this sometime after July. And our current actual fee rate is about $61,000 over what the flat fee rate is. So I expect to see an increase there when the time comes to renegotiate. We're in the middle of implementing a paperless option. At the last budget session, we were given authority to begin to do this. In the transition between the prior executive director and myself, I think we kind of took our eye off the ball there, but we've come back with a renewed focus. We're in the middle of this project now. Almost all of the pharmacist licenses have been scanned and are available electronically, and we intend to have this completed by the end of 2015. There are performance measures. We actually have 6. We don't have complete data for 2014, so I'm going to be giving you 2013, but if I have good statistics for 14, I'll drop them in just as an informational point for you. Pharmacies inspected. We have a goal of inspecting every single pharmacy within the state of Oregon, which we did in 2013. We had 100% compliance there. Of the pharmacies we did inspect, 98% were in compliance. Now, on your budget document, that is wrong. It has a number there of 83. As we were doing our final preparation, we realized that that number didn't look right and went back and rechecked it, and the number is 98%. Pharmacists completing their continuing education.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I think it was this board that we've heard multiple times has a process of self-inspection.
Yes.
So I'd like to hear of that 100% of that 98% compliance and 100% being inspected, how many were inspected by actually members of the board and how many of those were self-inspections?
Oh, every pharmacy does a self-inspection, but then we follow it up. That self-inspection form is, we were the first state in the nation to do this several years ago, and it has provided, it's been a boon to us. The concept behind it was we would rather have compliance through education than, you know, hiding behind trees and jumping out and writing tickets to people. So every year there's a self-inspection form that they're required to fill out that shows our primary focuses. It lists the relevant statute or rule, and the pharmacist is required to go through and check off that they did or did not do it. If they aren't doing it, they're allowed to correct it. And so as long as it's not, you know, the crime of the century or something, if they find that they're doing some paperwork wrong, they correct it. When we come in to do our inspection, it will not be held against them. So the self-inspection thing really is a tool for them to understand what it is we're looking for, to give them a chance to make sure that they're in compliance, so that when we come in, we don't have to write citations.
Paula, Mr. Go ahead. Chair. Thank you. That helped a lot. So you are, not necessarily you, your agency is personally visiting every pharmacy?
Yes, in the state.
Thank you.
And if I could maybe expound a little bit here, that's, I find that very, very valuable. If we're looking at our compliance cases, as I mentioned earlier, most of the other boards are complaint-driven. We are not only complaint-driven, but we do these inspections. In 2014, we had approximately 580 cases opened up. 60% of those were opened as a result of an inspection. 31% were complaint-driven, and 9% were just sort of others. So by our being there, looking, going through, we're finding violations and correcting them that we wouldn't know about otherwise. And typically, we're catching them early enough to where they don't become a huge problem that could harm the citizens. Average days to complete an investigation. From complaint to our presentation to the board, we're statutorily required to present that case within 120 days. Our KPM goal is 100 days, and in 2013, we were at 97 days. Customer service, we saw improvements in each category in 2013. This, again, is a renewed focus. We're going to continue to focus on that. And then board best practices, our board reviewed the best practices in June at the meeting and felt that we were 100% compliant in meeting those. If you're interested in the actual compliance cases in the governor's budget, there's two charts, one that shows the number of cases that we have and the other that shows the top discipline categories. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Karen for the policy packages.
Good morning, committee members.
Good morning.
My name is Karen McLean, Administrative Director for the Oregon Board of Pharmacy. And this morning I'll start with an essential package, which is Policy Package 90, which was made by our analyst, Claire Clark, at the Chief Financial Officer's office. Like Mark said, we were in the process of looking at biennial licensure, and this wasn't quite ready at the time we submitted our agency request budget, and it was a request we made later in the summer. And so Claire was able to incorporate that reduction of revenue anticipated into our budget. And like Mark said, that is about $806,000 that would reduce ending balance by issuing a license for the same price as we currently issue it for 2 years instead of one. We do think that we're going to see a lot of efficiencies come from that. I'll speak to policy package number 100, which is regarding personnel management. When Mark came on board, he really took a look at kind of our organizational chart and looked at the operational review that was done in 2012 that this committee asked for, and just looked at kind of all of the little pieces, which of course a new director would need to do. And he felt like he wanted to add one position so that we could focus directed attention onto our licensing area. Pieces of positions have been overseeing the licensing area for a very, very long time. I've been with the agency for 13 plus years now, and that was primarily one of my responsibilities, but I had a lot of other responsibilities as well. So today, our staff are being overseen by another member of our staff kind of more directly on a day-to-day basis, and we're hoping with the addition of this position that that can happen even more effectively, really, so that people aren't being taken away from their other responsibilities. This position would be one FTE. It's not a management service position. It's a, it would be a lead worker position, a program analyst, and the cost of adding that new position will be approximately $155,902 for the biennium, including services and supplies, training, materials, etc., as well as the staffing cost. The second part of this package includes adding funds to allow to use the services contract for human resource services through the Department of Administrative Services Enterprise Human Resource Office, and they would be providing human resource services. For us, that's about $71,520 for the new biennium. They've raised their rates for 15-17, significantly higher. So there's a monthly cost per employee, and so that's the current estimate for this service. One of the other pieces has to do with other differential, and really took a lot of looking at the funding for our executive director position and our compliance director positions and the disparities from market rates to state government pricing for salaries for these positions. The additional resources that would be necessary that the Department of Administrative Services Human Resource Office and the Chief Operating Officer also looked at this would be about $136,182. That increases the differential line item. Specifically, part of it was for hiring purposes, and part of it was to deal with compression issues within our compliance staff. Our compliance director was the lowest paid person on our compliance staff and has the most experience and years of knowledge as a pharmacist. And his position, it's one of those principal executive manager positions that trying to find out how to fit those into the professional practice positions is being relooked at by the Department of Administrative Services now. And so they did take a look at it. They took a look at the market comparisons for management positions and made an adjustment last fall. And so that was implemented, and we're absorbing that right now, and we're asking to have those resources added to our budget. The new position, as I mentioned, is in response to the operational review. The whole package for package 100 is $363,604. The next package, is package 100. This package would implement an upgrade to our existing database. We got our database in 2013 and have maintained that through maintenance with our vendor. But it's coming to a place where we can't do a lot more things with it, and the world has changed a lot in technology since 2013. And so our hope is to be able to upgrade our licensing and compliance database to enhance the online e-government opportunities for applicants, licensees, as well as the public, and to improve services overall. We hope with this we will be able to have advanced web-based platform, and we'll be able to have expanded configuration in our database. One of the things that our licensees can't do right now is when they have to change their address with our agency, which they're required to do within 15 days, they have to send us a fax, and then our staff has to stop and enter that, or an email, some written communication to tell us to make that change. With this new upgrade, they would actually be able to go on and do that themselves. We would be able to configure that into the program. They would also have the opportunity, once we were to develop this, would be to be able to actually apply online, to upload their documents online, to be able to go and check the status of an application and see what else is needed. Right now, it's all a paper process, and we don't have anything that would allow them to do it electronically. Our renewals for a number of the categories are online, but they're hybrid systems. So they're external to the database, and we have to have our IT consultant make sure those work every single time for us. So we haven't expanded to more than the individuals, the interns, pharmacists, and pharmacy technicians can do that electronically through a renewal. And we do have one small, the non-prescription drug outlets that can do that electronically. But that's the least complicated process that we have. And so if we were to make it a lot more complicated with those other renewals, they would be just too technical right now with the way we have the system.
If I could offer a slight correction, that software was implemented in 2003.
Did I say 13?
Yeah. So sorry. It's getting towards the end of life, and it's not meeting our needs. Be difficult to continue that for more than a few years.
So we are hoping to see great improvements. My apologies, committee members. One of the things that I would note is that we last summer received a one-time civil penalty through a case that the Department of Justice was able to settle. It was a fairly significant settlement, over $2.3 million, and the board received $570,000. Of that those resources, and it was Mark's hope that we would be able to pay for it out of those resources, so that it's part of our ending balance at this time. It's not going to require additional funding from our licensees to pay for this system.
Yeah, as a one-time...
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Since you went there, I'll ask the question now. So in looking at some of your policy package requests, not all of them, but certainly some of them, I'm hoping will be absorbed into that ending fund balance, some of those funds used to take care of the costs of some of these?
Yes. The software package directly came about, that discussion came about after this settlement. I looked at this as a way we had a one-time income that we could apply to do an upgrade that we're going to have to do in the next 3 to 5 years anyway, so that we would not have to touch any of our license fees from our licensees.
Great idea.
So you probably wouldn't be seeing this year if it were not for the fact that we received that money on a one-time basis.
Thank you.
I'll move on to policy package 102. The Department of Administrative Services risk management section strongly encouraged all agencies to increase the requirements for IT vendors to add to their professional liability insurance limits. And so at the time we made this request to our IT vendor, he said that he would need to raise his rates. And so when we went out for contract last time, we looked at the different vendors that were able to provide the service, but at the same time, the existing vendor provided the most necessary services that we needed. And so we went ahead and accepted his hourly rate increase. That's $25,000 increase to pay for his increased rate from $100 to $150 an hour. We don't have an IT staff person for our agency, and so this is, we feel like, money well spent. We don't have the resources to have a full-time person on board, and so it meets all of our needs to have him at this time. Policy package 103 is, like Mark mentioned, a continuation of our paperless office that we're moving towards. We have implemented the contract to move forward with the Oregon State Records Management Solution with the department, the Secretary of State Archives Division implemented a number of years back through a pilot project, and we were one of the first agencies in the last 2 years to sign on to be added to this. So all of our records that we're in the process of scanning right now for our licensing files, like Mark said, we're almost through with pharmacists. We'll move on to other categories and hope to have all of the licensing records scanned before the end of this biennium. And that was part of that policy package. Part of it also requires a monthly user fee to use this system called HP Trim. And so there's that was part of the contract for the Oregon Records Management Solution. And the hope is that eventually more state agencies and other local government entities will sign on to use this solution. And as there are more users, the per person price goes down per month. But we're nowhere near that right now. So it's about $37 per month per user. But the I know Secretary of State is out marketing this all the time, and they're sharing this resource with other people. The nice thing about this is that for the agency, though, they will be able to build into our record savings the records retention requirements through the Secretary of State's office, all of those things, and then those records will be destroyed accordingly and not have to have so much attention by the agency in the future because these electronic records will be destroyed on the right schedule. We do that now, but we do it once a year. And so I think this is going to be a good opportunity to be able to update that process. Let's see. Do we have one more package? I guess that's it. So in our governor's budget, we have a limitation request of $6,872.49, and our projected ending balance is $2,007,000, and that is approximately 9.52 months. We do recognize that that's high, but as this number of the committee members here will remember, we did have a higher ending balance at the end of last session. We worked on a solution with the Legislative Fiscal Office and the Chief Financial Office, and the intention was to reduce that over the next two biennia. So the plan was through 17-19 to be able to move that down again. I think we've made a lot of progress in that direction. The implementation of biennial, along with these policy packages, the policy packages 90 of 100, 101, and 103 all fall into the guidelines of the operational review that was conducted in 2012. Pardon me?
Senator Roblin has a question.
So that $2,726,616 mm-hmm. includes the $800,000 that you're going to be saving by going to biennial? So that's
yes.
So that's already accounted for.
Yes, okay. Committee members, Senator Roblin, that's true. So I think that we've made a lot of progress in a short amount of time, and I hope that we'll be able to continue to make that progress in 15-17 and 17-19.
Senator Roblin,
yeah, one follow-up. It would also include the expenditure of the money for the software update?
Yes.
Have been taken out of that ending fund balance?
Yes, committee members, okay. Senator Roblin, that is true.
Okay.
Representative Springer?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. No question. I just want to commend you. I know that over the last couple bienniums, some of us up at this dais have had dynamic conversations, I would say, with the board, and I'm feeling heard on many of those points. I'm seeing adjustments in response to those conversations. I appreciate the efforts to actually use the information in that 2012 review and working on getting that funding ending fund balance down and putting the licensees on a biennial schedule to be more efficient. So I just want to say kudos. Good job.
Thank you.
Can you talk to us about fee increases? What's the last time you had a fee increase, and do you anticipate any fee increases?
So, Senator Monroe, committee members, we had a fee increase in 2011, which generated that influx that caused us to have such a high ending balance. There was an error that was made in an accounting error that was made in 09-11. So it was quite a number of years ago now. And so that error was fixed. It was discovered after the fee request, the fee increase request was made and approved, after we had implemented the fee increases. So it was just kind of a horrible coming together of circumstances. Since that time, we were asked by this committee, and that was part of the plan, at the end of 11-13, we implemented fee in reductions, actually in April of 2013, right before the end of session. So the pharmacist fee was, I believe, $200 at the time per licensee, and we lowered that before those renewals went out the door. It happens in the last 3 months of the biennium for each year, and normally, actually. But that time it did happen at the end of the biennium. So we lowered the fee to $120, which is what it had been since 2001. So at this time, those license fees and other license fees were reduced. The rest of them were reduced on July 1st of 2013, and no other fees have been added or increased in this last biennium. Like Mark said, we plan to take a look at all of our fees as we go into preparations for 17-19 and see where we're at. We know that we'll realize additional savings in 17-19 because that's going to be the timing of when the pharmacy technicians go biennial. The savings will be realized in 17-19, not in 15-17, just from the timing of getting it alternating years. So is that answer your question?
So you would anticipate then that with the fee down at 120, that gradually your ending fund balance will be reduced?
Yes, sir. That is the intention.
Because we're looking for usually 3 or 4 months, not 9 months.
We intend to go back and do an evaluation here in a year or so to see what the impact of the biennial licensure is, to get a better picture there, and then adjust where appropriate. That may mean downwards, it may mean upward. I have no intentions of raising just because we can. My background is such that you ask for what you use and then you use that. You don't ask for more.
Senator Roblin.
So in that, looking at those in the future, we saw that different categories are growing at different rates. And so your money coming in from the different ones is going to be different.
Yes.
Depending on the services necessary, you might skew that cost per person if you don't adjust them individually amongst that so that they get, and that's what you're planning on doing?
Yes.
Okay.
Representative Taylor.
Senator Monroe, thank you. I just wanted to go back to, maybe you mentioned it and I missed it, regarding the expenses for the IT consultant. Mm-hmm. Do you happen to know, I don't know if you know off the top of your head, how much does that cost in the biennium for the IT consultant? Because you mentioned that you don't have someone in-house and they're raising their rates, and I was just curious, because you have a rather large, you have a bigger board than many.
Let me look real quick.
Oh, no, that's okay. I was just curious. I mean, you were.
I don't know it off the top of my head. Committee members, Representative Taylor, I think it's about, for 2 years, it's about $150,000.
Okay. And so is there some point in which you think about maybe bringing someone on, or follow-up, sorry,
go ahead.
Senator Monroe? I mean, obviously there's a fine balance between hiring someone as a consultant versus maybe having someone on staff. Is that something you're thinking about, or?
Committee members, Representative Taylor, at this point, our needs are met. I think it would cost a lot more money to have a person on staff for us, and nor do I think we need a full-time person. Mm-hmm. So the question at some point, I think with Mark's evaluation, is going to be, you know, where does that rubber hit the road? I don't know what the answer to that question is. At this point, he's available to us pretty much 24/7 and is able to meet all the needs we have. He oversees all of our network administration and our firewalls and all of those things that we need to meet essential business services.
Okay, thank you.
But if I could, though, to answer your question, nothing's sacred. I mean, we're going to keep looking, and if there's something that we can do better and for less money, we will investigate it and take appropriate action.
Well, I think I heard you also say that your Department of Justice flat rate is likely to be renegotiated up this summer. That'll add to your costs and reduce your ending fund balance.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I, too, want to share my appreciation. A couple of years ago, we could not even get an organizational chart about the Board of Pharmacy and what everybody was doing. It was very confusing, and the presentation today is remarkable. I appreciate the work that you've put into it, and it's very clear and concise, and appreciate your leadership.
Thank you very much. I have a lot of help. I have an awful lot of outstanding individuals in the agency that it's been an extremely pleasurable year to come in.
Okay, where are we?
We're at questions, so I think we've done those.
Okay.
Unless the committee members have more questions for us.
I have one. Pharmaceuticals coming in from Canada seems to be an issue I hear about a lot. I've heard from a number of my constituents that they can get a particular drug for a fraction of the cost by ordering it from Canada. Where do you come in terms of regulating drugs coming in from Canada or other countries?
That is a violation of the FDA rules. They don't prosecute for individual importation, but there's a real danger there too, in that the NABP, National Association of Boards of Pharmacy, have done some studies that show that over 80% of the drugs that purport to be coming from Canada are coming from other places. They're coming from China, India, Pakistan, Iraq in some cases. And these are the drugs that you don't know what's in them, how they've been stored, what the quality is. I think the number was extremely high as to how many of those were adulterated or not appropriate for use. So while Canada's pharmaceutical system is very robust and it works within their country, people trying to obtain those over the internet or through mail order are probably not getting Canadian drugs. They're paying a low price for something that they don't have a clue what it is they're getting. So while we don't have the authority to regulate it right now, if it, something were to be presented, I think that there would have to be some channels to guarantee the quality of the product.
That seems to me a problem that needs to be fixed. I, you know, if in fact Canadian pharmaceuticals are high quality from Canada, and they're much cheaper than in the United States, and our constituents would like to avail themselves of that lower price, and yet the fear is that they're not getting safe Canadian pharmaceuticals, they're getting them from, you know, someplace else. What's the answer?
Well, Canada's prices are the way they are because they have federal price controls on the drugs. The federal government decides what the drug manufacturers can charge. That is not the case here. So absent the United States taking a similar tact, there would have to be some sort of federal regulation, I would guess, would allow that practice to occur. And I'm not, I know there was a, I wasn't involved in this, but there was apparently some effort years ago to create some sort of pipeline from Canada into Oregon, and it failed. I'm not sure exactly why, whether that was federal resistance or what. But
so our pharmaceutical companies have maintained or have been responsible largely for maintaining the law that says you can't ship stuff in from Canada.
That would be the FDA, and it's not just Canada, it's importing drugs overall. How, then, but as I said, they don't really regulate that importation for individual people. So if you, as a person, want to do that,
I know a lot of people that get their drugs from Canada. I wish they could do that safely. You know, that's what troubles me.
Yeah.
Additional questions? Okay. Are we ready to hear from Claire?
Good morning, Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Claire Clark. I'm from the Chief Financial Office. The agency has done a fantastic job presenting all the nuts and bolts of the governor's budget, so I don't want to waste your time repeating information you've just heard. But I would like, I think I can add some value by displaying their information graphically and going over a little bit of the history of the board's expenditures. So here in this chart, you can see a brief history of the board's expenditures from 2011-13 to the 2015-17 governor's budget. The increase from 2011-13 to 2013-15 is due to adjustments to the board's licensing division staff and a paperless records retention project that were both approved by the 2013 legislature. The 2015 budget, 15-17 budget for the board is approximately $6.9 million, and this is a 16% increase from the 2013-15 legislatively approved budget. Of that increase, about one-third, or $300,000, is a one-time cost for that database upgrade that the agencies just described, and then about $600,000 costs will be ongoing. These include increases due to inflation, as well as the cost for an additional staff person, personnel expenses, and then those other streamlining efforts that the agency is engaged in. So this chart shows the revenues for the board over time. This is also an other funded agency. Their revenues are primarily generated from examining, licensing, and renewal fees charged to pharmacists, pharmacy technicians, pharmacy interns, and then other various drug outlets. At times, the board also receives money through fines and settlements, and these are displayed in green in the fines and forfeiture category. So that's where you would see that $570,000 civil penalty that the board received this biennium. So as you can see in this chart, the board's revenues increased substantially in the 2011-13 biennium. This is when the legislature approved those fee increases, hoping to address a perceived revenue shortfall that was determined to be an accounting error. So they continued at this fee level until 2013, when the legislature reduced those fees to account for that growing cash balance. And then for the 2015-17 governor's budget, we propose transitioning those pharmacy and pharmacy technician licenses from annual to biannual licensure at the reduced annual rate for the first cycle of these biannual renewals. And that will reduce the board's revenues by $806,548 for the 2015-17 budget. So with this change and the policy packages in the governor's budget, the board will have an ending balance of about $2.7 million, equal to 9.5 months of operating expenses. So this is a reduction from the current biennium's ending balance, which will be about $4.6 million, and that's equal to about 16 months. So we'll go from 16 months at the end of this biennium to 9.5 months at the end of 2015-17. So to summarize, the governor's budget for the Board of Pharmacy includes resources to maintain services at the current level, invest to ensure that the board can continue to provide quality customer service as the number of licensees and licenses continues to grow. And because they've already described to you all their packages, I think I will leave it at that, and I welcome any questions you might have.
Yes, Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just something that you said in your presentation there brought up a question for me. The proposal, as I understand it, is in the first round of biennial renewals, you will still pay the same thing that you paid for your 1 year, but you will get it for 2 years.
Yes.
That, however, will not necessarily continue?
We'll reevaluate depending on what the outcome is. Okay. And we understand you want us to get this down to a lower number. If that's the best method to do so, then we will. But we think we know what the outcome will be from doing that. We don't have a firm understanding, so.
Okay. Senator Roblin.
So if the numbers are right, you have a $6.6 billion budget. Or manual or whatever, and you're going to reduce it to revenue that's only going to bring in about $5.5 million. So they should catch up fairly quickly if you're in discrepancy between the incoming and the out. And at the point where you get to that 3 months, you do have to reevaluate and decide what the actual fees are that'll keep that 3 months going. So I understand that. And I think this is probably as good a way as possible because you're actually giving the people who actually paid the extra their money back, as opposed to shifting it to people who are coming in future to get the advantage of it. So I appreciate what you're doing, actually.
Yes, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many of the 20 FTE, if it's approved, are investigator-type positions?
Five investigators and one supervisor, so total six.
Okay. Follow-up?
Go ahead.
Did you have, and I missed, how many complaints on average annually that you deal with?
Yes, there is a chart in the budget. In 2014, it was approximately 580. And we're off to the races this year. I don't know what's going on, but we currently have 80 cases already. So if it continues at that rate, we're going to see a much higher caseload than we have in years past.
Representative Springer.
Were you finished?
I think so. I guess, thank Representative Hussman, did that answer your question?
Yes, okay. Thank you.
Of those five positions, six positions actually, those are also the individuals that are doing the inspections?
Yes.
Thank you.
Senator Roblin.
And on those complaints, I think you said earlier, about two-thirds of them are initiated by your people going out and doing it, and a third are by...
Yes. 60% are initiated by an inspection, and 31% are initiated by a complaint.
Okay. So you are clearly not complaint-driven, as are most of the other boards. You do twice as much of that work by your investigator staff.
That's true. And I really believe that it helps keep the degree of egregiousness down. When we're in there every year and they know that we're going to be there, they're more vigilant. If we do catch something, it's typically in the beginning of a process to where it hasn't grown so big that the outcome is bad.
Go ahead.
And in that process, as you were saying before, they do a self-evaluation ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And if they have found an area where they are not in compliance and they list it on their self-evaluation, you will not necessarily find them as you fix it. If they had not mentioned it and you do find it, that's where the fines come from?
Yes. And of course, it depends on what it is.
But away. Yeah, exactly.
If it's a crime of the century, then we still don't go away. But right. if it's paperwork, some procedure or something that they've found and realized and fixed it, we don't do that.
Okay. Are we done? Kim?
Is it?
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do either of the board members want to say anything? Since we have them here, I just give them the opportunity, please.
Sure. Somebody out there want to come forward and elucidate us?
They were hoping to not.
Hi, I'm Ken Wells, the current president of the board, and I've been on the board since 2009. And I just want to echo some comments that you as committee members have all made this morning, and then Mark and Karen have made. First of all, it's been refreshing for the support and leadership of Mark, and he's also really looked into the things and tried to bring to you really what we're doing and how we're doing it, and making sure that we as a board are doing what you expect us to do. And I think we're on a great track. We were very surprised with how big our ending balance came back, and we as a board have been very supportive of staff in their suggestions and our suggestions to get this challenge taken care of. And I just want to, just to say that, because as I know I can speak for my other board members, we're really pleased with the direction we're going. We still have a lot of work to do.
Thank you, Mr. Wells. Are there questions for Mr. Wells? Thank you, and thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Anybody else that wanted to be heard? Okay, can you tell us what we're doing tomorrow? And
yes, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, for Tuesday and Wednesday, you'll have the health-related licensing boards, and then for Thursday, you'll have the Board of Dentistry.
Okay. Any questions for staff? Thank you all for coming, Madam Co-Chair.
Just an announcement this afternoon, and for Senator Roblin can help me with the process here, but we're going to have the opportunity for committee members to come in small groups to learn about everything we've been doing lately and education, and we're inviting you to come. It's between 4 and 5 at the caucus office in the Senate side. And what else, Senator Roblin?
We have 3 days scheduled, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, so any of those days will work for people.
Yes.
Do we have a invite in our email that maybe
you should be getting one. We tried to schedule it so that we wouldn't end up with a majority of any group, so that we aren't.
So should we wait to see which one we're invited to, show up at them?
I think they had put Rosie in charge of doing this because we had it in our office.
Yes.
So if you just touch base with it, it works out. Especially if it's a day that doesn't work for you, we can make those shuffles. So.
Yeah.
Okay. I see some of you there. Anything else? Thank you very much. We're adjourned. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.